Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by betonline.ag. A little bit of a somber atmosphere out here in Las Vegas after the tragic events of last night. I'm sure by the time this podcast goes live, everybody will be caught up to speed. 50 people announced dead at the Harvest 91 Music Festival, over 400 injured. Really puts into perspective what we do here on Bet the Board. So we'll try and provide a little bit of entertainment, levity, and get you focused on the week ahead. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by Payne Insider. Payne puts what we do into perspective, my friend, when you hear about tragic events like this.
And I'm typically a guy that the big stuff usually doesn't bother me. I usually let little stuff get to me. I'm working on that, but certainly puts things in perspective, as you know. And I'm gonna try not to let the little stuff get to me as much anymore.
You've come a long way, and it goes without.
You're being nice.
It goes without saying to all the police officers that were involved, first responders. We know there are a lot of you that listen to this podcast religiously out here in the desert. So for anybody that had friends, family, coworkers, colleagues, etc., involved, our thoughts and prayers go out to you guys today. Hopefully, everybody emerges. We know there will be a whole lot of collateral damage from this particular instance. But Payne, let's get into the task at hand. We have a busy show on tap today. Some surprises and disappointments that we saw during NFL Week 4. Want to play a little bit of buy or sell at the quarter poll, figuring out if teams are contenders or pretenders. Look ahead lines, market movement, our review of, I guess, I don't know if it's insensitive, but American Assassin that we took in, that we took in last week. Monday Night Football preview, and of course, a big announcement. Thankfully, all of our Bet the Board gear for 2017 has arrived. So let's start at the top and kind of put a bow on the week that was before we even talk about Kansas City taking on the Washington Redskins. Surprises, and I'll open the floor up to you in terms of what you saw in viewing the football this weekend.
Well, wasn't a ton of good games, I didn't think. That was the first thing.
Everyone keeps talking about how the level of play has improved leaps and bounds. It's much more competitive from what we saw week one. I don't know if they're watching the same games we are, but I don't want to step on your toes.
No, I mean, listen, NFL football's king. There was a lot of good stuff out there. A lot of weird spots. I mean, certainly, you know, I'm looking at this list here. The Rams offense. That was, I don't want to say it's a surprise because McVay's been fantastic so far. They're doing a lot of great things, a lot of next level things. 2017, 2018 things offensively. But, you know, I kind of want to put it in perspective when you're talking about Dallas's defense. One, they're not very good. Two, they're without their quarterback on defense and Sean Lee. So, and then you get the 10 days of prep versus 6 days of prep. You get the look ahead spot with the Packers on deck. So, you know, these are always tough for me to gauge. And this week there weren't a ton of those spots that we talked about last week where, you know, professional bettors are one way and a team overcomes that spot. I know the Browns were one of those spots. Cincinnati really kind of showed up this week in a spot that a lot of professional bettors didn't think they would. So that was impressive to me. Bill Lazor got things going offensively there, starting to get a lot of those key players implemented, starting to really focus on the guys that drive that offense. But again, it's the Browns. So, you know, not a ton to take from there, I don't think. But other than that, I mean, there wasn't a ton, I didn't think. There wasn't anyone that had some crazy performance. It might have been a little different. You know, we could have had probably the Colts lead off the top of this show had that first half sustained to the second half, but man, Seattle came on like a wildfire in the second half. So I initially, as I was writing some notes down watching these games, I was like, man, this Colts team, Jacoby Brissett, I mean, really, really looking impressive here. I mean, they're going into half with the lead despite the pick six. They're really dominating the first half of this game, and then the wheels just really fell off.
Well, there was another team close to a double-digit dog, and I'm not sure if we want to give them full marks for being a surprise in the positive direction or a disappointment, considering their opponent. When you look at the Carolina-New England game, any major takeaways from a Panthers team that looked anemic offensively a week before against the Saints, and New England still having issues trying to figure out their defense, at least through the first four games?
I had spoken to one sports book that takes pretty sharp action, and I had spoke to a number of my local guys who are willing to take a bet from professional bettors, and I kid you not, the response was the Carolina Panthers are our largest liability today. So there was some big money on the Panthers. What I think the thing I took from that game is, one, we know how bad the New England Patriots are defensively. But you see Cam Newton before the game. He's either all in on certain games or he just doesn't care. He had the bebop going before the game. And whether that was because he saw the Patriots defense on film and knew it was going to be a big day, or he was feeling a little healthier. And it's probably a combination of both, but the biggest takeaway to me there was he had 8 carries in this game. He was willing to hold on to the ball. There's certainly some question marks with the shoulder. Is it 100% healthy after the offseason shoulder surgery? Running the ball 8 times tells me he's feeling good, and that was my biggest takeaway from that game.
The interesting part was when you watch the post-game press conference with Cam Newton and hear his comments, he said it wasn't the Patriots that disrespected it was. He pointed to guys in the media and when you guys kind of disrespected us. So he definitely played with a renewed sense of purpose and I don't know, like you said, the carry show that he was going to go out there and do everything he possibly could to at least make this competitive on the heels of that embarrassing performance.
And Shady McCoy said something similar.
Well,
when they went into Atlanta and beat those guys, I mean, he was kind of over the top. He's sitting there in the locker room in his towel and he's saying, oh, why don't you come interview the winners now? You guys thought we were going to lose. We were 8-point underdogs. Why don't you come interview the winners now? So he was pretty animated with that as well.
It's always funny when players who we know are supposed to raise their game every single time they get out there play with an extra chip on their shoulder, but from teams that kind of surprised in a good way. There were trio teams that I would call borderline debacles, maybe two more so than three. So I'm going to give you your choice, Payne. When we look at the Chargers, we know they've been the bane of our existence. They're dead to us and the bane of our existence, so we can ignore them. The Miami Dolphins, offensively, the performance against the Saints in London, or of course the Tennessee Titans, those same Titans that surrendered 57 points in a divisional loss on the road against the Houston Texans.
Well, we can probably begin in the backyard a little bit. It looked promising, that opening drive, until the interception in the end zone. I know Cutler is certainly at fault there, really predetermined that, didn't take his time, threw up a ball that really wasn't a catchable ball. At the same time, Adam Gase has got to put guys in position to succeed. And throwing jump balls to Julius Thomas at this stage in his career, I know he's got a warm place in his heart for him from all those years in Denver, but he is not very good. He's not very athletic anymore. He's a shell of himself. So throwing jump balls to Julius Thomas, who can't really jump over a sheet of paper, is just bad to begin with. I don't know where to go with them. We know of the weird scheduling due to Hurricane Irma. They'll have close to 18,000 miles traveled once they get home from London in the last 3 weeks. You got a new quarterback coming in. Your offensive line struggling. You start to look at a lot of these guys, and I actually broke this game down a little bit already. Juwan James, Anthony Steen, they're doing some above-average work. Before the Saints game, Tunzel had been bad at best. Bushrod, he's kind of done at this point. Mike Pouncey, one of the most overrated linemen in football, and he's now off of hip surgery, where there was guys thinking, hey, he might not walk normal again after this. And you're seeing this. Jai, he's having issues finding the holes. Last year, a lot of his success was solely because of him. He forced 58 missed tackles last year. That was 25% better than the second best Le'Veon Bell. 900 of those yards last year came after contact. So this offensive line has been a mess for a while. It's even worse this year. Cutler is running for his life. Yesterday he was pressured on 50% of his throws. That's just not going to do it, especially when you talk about the New Orleans Saints. I know they're getting better defensively, but they came into that game 31st in defensive efficiency. So there are some issues there.
Well, the Saints can get better, but the way Miami made the Saints look, although yeah. Carolina very similar the weekend before. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Let's put it this way. When we see the Saints again out of the bye, but the Dolphins have to do better, especially in comeback mode.
And I think, you know, it's got a lot to do with multiple things here. The biggest thing might be when you're implementing Jay Cutler, I know he's familiar with the system, but he's not familiar with these players. And when you lose that bye week, and this is something you're going to have to monitor, is Adam Gase came out and said, hey, I'm going to implement my own bye weeks by simply giving guys less reps at practice, potentially less snaps in games, and giving guys days off during the week. So if you've monitored this, and it's pretty funny, I told you this the other day, it's like, oh, everyone's worried about like this guy, he didn't practice, that guy didn't practice. Well, if you're not familiar with the situation, you're going to have a lot of this dealing with Dolphins injury reports this year. So the trio of Ajayi, Landry, and Parker have all had rest days at different points during each practice week so far. And that's going to be the case moving forward. And it's probably not great when you're dealing with Jay Cutler. First time in it, playing with these guys. I know it's the system he's familiar with, but still, a little bit different verbiage, a little bit different guys coming out of their breaks differently. So that's something you're going to definitely have to monitor. Defensively, though, I know when you look at the success rate metrics, the Dolphins aren't very good, but it's clear they're playing a bend but don't break style. And so when you look at this through 3 weeks, they've only allowed 19 points per game on average. That's probably going to win you a lot of football games, and they've been on the field a ton, 71 minutes the last 2 weeks. So that's something else you're going to want to monitor if they're going to eventually start to wear down being on the field that much because the offense just isn't sustaining possession.
No, it definitely wasn't on the defense yesterday in that loss. I mean, when you go out there and don't score any points, very tough to win football games. But I thought when you watch the Dolphins defense getting to the half only down 3-0, seeing Cutler march in the length of the field on the opening drive, you think they're going to make those adjustments, and they really went into the tank throughout the course of the second half. I guess on the other side, I mean, there's a team in the Tennessee Titans who went into the tank as soon as that game started, spotting the Houston Texans. This is a team, Payne, that I really can't figure out. The interesting part, obviously, is they take on the Dolphins this coming weekend, but what do we make of the Titans' performance? I mean, they were nowhere to be found defensively, and by the time the offense woke up, it was too little too late.
There was a couple interesting things here. One, I mean, how many times can we beat this dead horse? I mean, it's Mike Mularkey. You just don't know what you're going to get from him as a head coach. This surprises me a little bit. I will say this, though. There were two schools of thought. There was certainly more sharp money on the Titans this week. I leaned Houston. I, of course, like an idiot, respected the money that was on the Titans and didn't bet the side I liked in Houston. And there was some resistance. You know, you saw a couple sports books, the sharper ones. Anytime they went to 3 on Sunday, they got nipped right back to 2.5. So, you know, defensively, they started to bring in some new guys in the secondary. The talent evaluators just didn't do their job. And I said this from day one, and I just don't like to bag on everybody, but Adoree Jackson isn't very good, right? He's a fantastic, like, the home run plays, certainly he picks some balls off because he's athletic and go up and get the ball, and you see him on special teams, he's great. He can't cover anybody. He couldn't cover anybody at USC. And so bringing him in there and thinking he was going to be a day one starter, not very good. Dick LeBeau, potentially past his prime at this point. You got to figure that out a little bit. And this will kind of be twofold. We can sneak another impressive performance in there because obviously it was Deshaun Watson. A lot of the reason the math guys and were on Tennessee was this. Dick LeBeau, 28-4 against rookie starting quarterbacks coming into this game. He had made his money just torturing rookie quarterbacks. Deshaun Watson goes out there and ties a rookie record with 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, there was no struggle in Deshaun Watson yesterday.
None. And that secondary was a mess. Deshaun Watson actually only had one ball that we graded that was a potential turnover throw. That was it, which is a huge upgrade for what he's been doing so far. And he made the leap now. You're looking at a lot of these websites. He jumped from, you know, grading out at this point through 3 weeks was the worst quarterback in the NFL. Now he's jumped up to like 28th after this past performance. So he's making those strides. And it was exactly what I said last week. you lose to New England, and I think that instilled a lot of confidence, right? You go into New England, you probably should have beat them. There's probably a coaching error there, not going for it on fourth and short. Instead, you kick the field goal, and you know you're doing that against Tom Brady. They really left that game with confidence. Watson, I know, made a couple mistakes, but he was able to move them. It just carried over to this week. That offense is the most confident I've seen it. You can just tell. When you start to watch some of this all 22 stuff, you can just see receivers, how crisp they're getting out of breaks, how, you know, mentally entrenched they are in a game. When you have a quarterback that can't get you the ball, suddenly those routes are a little slower. They're not as crisp. You can see all this stuff on film, and it really translates to the games.
I'll tell you one team that it instilled with confidence, and it had nothing to do with the game taking place between Houston and Tennessee. Apparently, the Chicago Bears have taken notice of Deshaun Watson's impressive performance and named Mitchell Trubisky their starter for Monday night's game against the Minnesota Vikings as we record the podcast now. See that news breaking. So something to keep tabs on there.
Mike Zimmer's defense.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see exactly how the young rookie fares. Some extra time to prepare. I have to imagine John Fox had this in the back of his mind despite not committing to it in the post-game press conference or over the last couple of days. So Mitchell Trubisky will be your new Chicago Bears starter. Payne, want to play a quick game with a lot of these teams. Like I said, as we get to the quarter pool, we start to figure out who we're dealing with from an identity standpoint. So we'll play like a little buy or sell, and I want to start with the Buffalo Bills. Are you buying or selling what you've seen from Buffalo through four games?
Ooh, I love McDermott. The players have clearly bought in. They're confident. We alluded to Shady McCoy sounding extremely confident in the postgame. I will say this, though. At 3-1, they're still negative yards per play differential. And the way they want to play with that ground game, and I keep hammering this, they're not overly successful. Less than 37% of their runs are grading successful right now because of that style change where they don't have the personnel to execute that zone scheme. So I at this point, I think I have to sell Buffalo.
New England Patriots, just a blip on the radar with their 2-2 start or something to be concerned about going forward?
There's at 2-2, I will say this. There's probably never been a better time over the last 10 or 15 years to buy Patriots stock. Their defense is on pace for historic ineptitude. It is bad. It's 31st in defensive success rate. They're allowing 7.2 yards per play. That is, and I kid you not, a full yard worse than the second worst team in the NFL. But, you know, you're playing in a division with the Bills, who we just sold, the Jets and Dolphins. I think you kind of have to trust history here. And if you can't trust Brady and Belichick to figure it out, I'm not sure who you can trust. So you probably have to take a little nibble here.
Houston Texans, coming off of that impressive performance, we've seen them get healthy in a hurry the last couple weeks.
This was the interesting thing to me when I dug into this. They're negative 0.4 yards per play. And your young quarterback has the best performance so far of his career. So you'd think potential sell here. The thing is, you just don't know when Andrew Luck's coming back. He's going to practice this week for the first time lightly. You still have Bortles. And you have a Titans team that can't spell defense, has Mike Mularkey as their coach, and Mariota is dealing with that hamstring. So that's one thing you're going to want to figure out there. The MRI comes back today. If you read his lips on the sideline, he clearly says the word pop. So, you know, four extremely winnable games at home against Cleveland, Indianapolis, Arizona, and San Francisco. So they're going to be in the hunt the entire way. I don't think you can sell the Texans.
You be careful when you speak about Blake Bortles. He had the 15-35 performance for 140 some odd yards against the Jets in an overtime loss. Denver Broncos, 3-1 now. Impressive defensive performance, albeit against a backup quarterback in E.J. Manuel with Derek Carr getting sidelined. Denver, a pretender or contender?
Oh, they're a contender. I'm you know, at 3-1, you don't want to completely buy into that, but I think I've been on them higher than most, higher than the market. I know it's why both of us played them last week. And for me, it's Vance Joseph. I'm very familiar with him. I know he's a leader. I know he's a motivator. Guys want to play for him. The defensive schemes are next level, specifically in the secondary. And when you pair it with his talent back there, it's going to be pretty fun to watch. Still some reservations about Simeon turning it over. I know he wasn't great yesterday in the green zone, but if you actually go back and watch that game, 55% of his dropbacks, he was under pressure. That was most of the NFL last week. So even though they're 3-1, I'm going to buy they're going to come out of the bye week, and you're going to face the Giants in Los Angeles. So I'm not really sure that they're going to come down from this.
One quick question on the Broncos, not to spend too much time here. Run defense wise, I mean, where is this performance? Yeah, where does this performance come from? Scheme. They really seem to have sold out. All Vance Joseph scheme.
Scheme. You did bring in Petco. The guy's like 33. I know he's playing good. I don't know how long that can last, but it's certainly a ton to do with scheme. I mean, this. A lot of people are going to look at the metrics. I know a lot of people were bashing the hire initially, like, oh, look at this Dolphins. The Dolphins defense last year was horrific. And like the last 8 games, they were playing with guys that are probably not in the league right now. A lot of them are not. So to kind of just mask that and be competitive and get them into the playoffs, that was special. He is next level defensively. And he's learned from a lot of the great guys. Guys like Mike Zimmer. So this is for real. That Broncos defense is significantly improved with the stuff they're doing.
Dallas Cowboys right now at 500, Payne. Can we make the argument that they're the third best team in their own division?
Nah, I have no clue here. This is probably a pass for me. I know a lot of professional bettors sold at the beginning of the season. The defense is as bad as it gets. They can't do anything. The problem is if you sell them, you're effectively buying the Giants and Redskins to a degree.
We could buy the Eagles along, you know, that same line.
Yeah, I mean,
line.
The Eagles are going to be there, right? There's going to be some fight there.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything with the Cowboys.
No, I guess the Redskins are the interesting team. And, of course, we'll get to them in greater detail tonight for the Monday Night Football game against the Kansas City Chiefs. New Orleans Saints going into the bye week off back-to-back wins against Carolina and the Dolphins.
Big bye. Big bye.
Do we think this defensive bounce is sustainable from what you've seen? I know you probably haven't had a chance to go through and watch the game against the Dolphins multiple times, but what you saw defensively scheme-wise against Carolina, sustainable going forward?
I think so. And, you know, the offense is going to get better too, right? And it's tough to say that, but, you know, you look at a lot of the metrics, they're 6th in offensive efficiency, and now they add Willie Snead back off the 3-game suspension. It appears they're going to stop worrying about the feelings of their 2 veteran backs and get Kamara more involved. I know Carolina and Miami won't be confused with the greatest show on turf, but a lot of new parts on defense, a lot of young parts on that defense. I think their O-line is only going to get healthier. We've talked about the 2 tackles missing time. They're going to get much healthier during their bye week. And then you start to look at that schedule. 7 of your final 12 games are at home in the dome. I like the Saints a little bit here.
It's definitely something that'll work in their favor. Drew Brees continues to age, and much like Tom Brady, appears to get even better. The chemistry we've seen with receivers, especially Michael Thomas, nothing short of amazing, at least over the past couple weeks. And lastly, in our abbreviated version of buy or sell, obviously I have to go with the Los Angeles Rams.
Ooh, I thought you were going somewhere else. I thought you were going to allow me to shit on a team that I like to shit on.
Well, if you want to shit on a team, trust me, our listeners love that, and I'm not going to stop you and stand in the way of a freight train barreling down the tracks.
This is tough for me because I'm a McVay guy. It's an offensive league. You're looking at the Rams right now, number 2 in yards per play, number 2 in passing success rate. It's crystal clear. There's a different level of confidence. Guys have bought in. They want to be a part of this culture change. But you really start to dig into this a little bit here, and you beat Scott Tolzien. You barely survived the 49ers. You catch the Cowboys with 4 extra days of prep without their defensive QB and Sean Lee, looking ahead to the Packers. The only semi-competent opponent you faced without an edge in spotter situation was the Redskins, and you got beat pretty convincingly at home. So, begrudgingly, I am going to sell for now, but this time next week, may change that thought. Big game on deck.
We
shall see.
There is no doubt about it. The game you're referring to, one we'll get to in a little bit of detail, when they play host to the Seattle Seahawks in what will be a pivotal NFC West showdown.
Sell the Lions, by the way.
I was going to ask you. You know, we're a little long on time, so I had to try and jump around. So you want to sell the Lions is what
they're
you're telling me.
They're going to be the death of me, but huge sell. Negative 8 yards per play. And you start to look at those teams they played. Not very good. Not very good. And they've really just luck boxed into a lot of these wins. They were just thoroughly dominated by Atlanta. And, you know, this past week, just without your starting quarterback, and then the Vikings starting running back goes down, just a huge sell.
That salty voice you hear with me every Monday and Thursday during the NFL season, and of course on Wednesdays salty. For college football. No, it's a good point. Not always salty. I shouldn't cast you in such a negative light. It's Payne Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And Payne, on to only a handful of games where we've seen some market movement based on week four results. And we'll go quickly through this one because I know this is a team we probably don't want to talk about the rest of the season, given what they've meant to us. Look, current line, the New York Giants playing host to the Los Angeles Chargers. It's 4 at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 44.5. You have seen movement off the key number of 3 from the look-ahead number we have from the Westgate Superbook.
Who?
All right, moving on to the next game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills. Cincinnati, right now, a 3-point favorite. This is, the reason I ask about this, it did open 2.5. That number didn't last. The look-ahead number there was 3. You mentioned the Bills being outgained in back-to-back. LeSean McCoy playing with a chip on his shoulder. This number, just real quickly to touch on.
The line paints a picture, doesn't it?
I think it tells you an awful lot of what we seem to know versus reality versus perception.
Little revenge spot there, too.
Browns and Jets. Current number on this game, Cleveland, a 2-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on the game, 39. Look-ahead number here had Cleveland a 4-point favorite. We didn't really touch on either of these two teams in greater detail at any point so far during the show. Are we buying the Jets' 2-game winning streak? And I ask, like we do every single year on this fine podcast, what the hell is wrong with the Cleveland Browns and this so-called improvement that we thought was inevitable coming into the season?
You bagged on me a little bit last week for talking about that Cleveland Bengals game. And then for our listeners at home, I get a text at about 1:30-ish. Watching this Bengals-Cleveland game.
Hey, I listen to what you talk about in this podcast. I like to pay extra attention to things. And so when you raise valid points, I'm going, you know what? I don't think Payne is perpetually full of shit. So I'm going to try and watch and observe. I watched probably about a quarter and a half, saw everything I needed to see from the Cleveland Browns, realized how deficient this defense is without Danny Shelton, without Myles Garrett, without Jamie Collins, and went, all right, there's clearly some major issues that Hugh Jackson needs to address.
How disappointed are you when you attempt to find my potential poo in every, like 99% of the time?
I do not try and poke holes in all of your arguments. I know you're right the majority of the time. I still like to go back and see things with my own eyes. Because trust me, there are a number of teams that I don't watch week in, week out. I typically flip around, especially through the early games, and say that I can get a good grasp on 6 games. The Browns have not made the rotation, at least for the first couple weeks. So I had to spend some extra attention with them. And I think I saw everything I needed to see.
They're still talent deficient. You see them add all these nice pieces. And you're like, oh, they're finally starting to get some talent. They're just so talent deficient that even with the addition of like all these pieces, you can just tell they're steps slow. They're not as athletic. They're not as fast. For the Jets, though, you got to tip your cap to Todd Bowles. I know these past 2 games, again, you're catching the Dolphins in a prime situational spot. You're catching the Jaguars in a prime situational spot. So you don't want to jump on the bandwagon too much, but it's still the NFL. You still have to go out and win the games. I want to give Todd Bowles credit here because they handed him... It was a bad hand, right? I don't know if they were trying to get him out of town. Eventually, that's probably what would have happened if they went something like 1-15, 0-16. But you've set him up to fail here. And so far, through 4 weeks, he's 2-2. He's not failing. And... you know, there appears to be some new energy within the locker room. And McCown has played okay so far. I didn't love what they did to throw that game away. I mean, you're up 10 going in for another score. Why you're even attempting a pass behind the line of scrimmage is beyond me. So they did almost throw that away. But a 2-2 on a team that was projected and set up to fail, I like what they're doing so far.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team. We talked about a franchise in New York getting the number one
McCown
pick in the draft.
Going back to Cleveland, too.
The McCown revenge tour continues in a game that I'm not sure more than the most degenerate bettors or diehard fans will tune into this coming weekend.
Rams, what's that total look like?
This total right now, you're looking
39.
At 39 at betonline.ag.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, we don't want you to tip your hand too much on exactly where we'll be looking for this weekend's card. Rams and Seahawks, a late game for NFC West supremacy. All of a sudden, this game takes on added intrigue when you see Seattle flip it into another gear. Of course, the Seahawks will be without the services of Chris Carson. Looks to be being lost for the season. Changes up their backfield a little bit. And lo and behold, Pete Carroll goes deep into the well and pulls out Arkansas State product J.D. McKissic, who bursts onto the scene with two touchdowns himself and looks like a little a water bug out there catching the ball out of the backfield. This campaign, you've seen a major shift in the market, though. Right now at betonline.ag, the Rams, a 2.5-point home favorite here. Look-ahead number had the Seahawks listed as a 3-point favorite at the Westgate Superbook. 1 week's worth of results, 5.5-point line movement. I'm not sure I'm buying it.
I concur.
All right, we move on to the next game. I like this bridge version of where we go with some of the podcasts to probably the marquee game of Sunday afternoon. Dallas Cowboys, a chance for revenge against the Green Bay Packers. Again, they lost 34-31 in the playoffs a season ago. Dallas right now a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game, 52.5. Look-ahead number had the Cowboys pegged as a full field goal favorite. Number has ticked down. I guess the first things first, what do we know about Sean Lee's status, and do we think that was just a one-game absence from the defensive side for the Cowboys?
That's the first thing you're going to want to try and figure out this week. So, dealing with a hamstring, need to find out more this week, see if he starts practicing. That's going to be the key, if he can just get out onto the field. And even if he's limited, that'll be some progress. I'm not sure he's going to be 100% if he does play this week, but... You know, you get the double revenge. You get double playoff revenge. So it'll be interesting to see how low this game ticks. There's injuries on both sides. There's still some guys beat up for Green Bay, and we know it's a much different team away from Lambeau Field. They do have the extra prep, but when you start to look at some of these numbers on how much they beat opponents by on average at home, it's about 11 points. What are they doing on the road? It's about a point different. So it's just a completely different team away from Lambeau Field.
Well, I want to get your quick take on Green Bay's performance. Everyone, you know, wants to blame the Bears and Mike Glenn. Obviously the Bears switching quarterbacks, but the Packers were out gaining that 308 to 260 yards. You don't score 35 points all that often in the National Football League when you gain 260 yards. Rodgers did have four touchdowns, but didn't even eclipse 200 yards passing. Now Ty Montgomery, you mentioned some of the injuries. The offensive line, we know, has been an ongoing concern. A very interesting game when you try and figure out where these two teams are at this point in the season.
Yeah. No doubt about that. You know, there was a little weather there, obviously, and then there was that massive delay. So sometimes takes you out of form offensively for a rhythm offense, but it wasn't a great performance.
So Green Bay and Dallas, another game that we will cover, obviously, in greater detail, knowing the two fervent fan bases and the implications it has to trying to help us figure out what the NFC hierarchy looks like. Payne, before we get to the movie review, I did want to ask you about one other team who lost two of their key contributors on the offensive side of the ball. What do we know about the status of Mohamed Sanu or Julio Jones? And if they're lost for the Falcons, how does that change the way we grade this team out? Fortunately for Atlanta, they do have a bye week coming up.
The bye week is going to be big. So not sure. A lot of the MRI stuff, for people that don't know, is going to... Doctors are going to do their initial on-field work. They're going to diagnose somebody if he can come back and play. If not, they're going to give their initial feelings on potentially what it could be. These guys don't go into MRI until today. So we'll find out how severe it is. Certainly that bye week is coming at the right time. A lot of that Buffalo victory had to do with the second half and receivers not being able to get open. So clearly when you remove a guy like Julio Jones from that offense, it's not just catching the ball. It's the space he creates for others. And you could see not a lot of separation from those secondary and third receivers on that Atlanta team. So Matt Ryan hasn't looked great with this new offense. And if Julio Jones is down or Sanu's down for any extended time, which I'm not sure what it looks like. We'll find out more this week. That could be an obvious issue.
And this was a Falcons team that we had talked about. A lot of people saying that they were clear NFC front runners, but If you don't get fortunate in late game situations with a drop at Chicago week one, the Lions coming up a foot short, all of a sudden we could be talking about the Falcons 1-3 and the Super Bowl hangover narrative a lot more compelling than Atlanta just dealing with some injuries as they head into the bye week. Movie last week was American Assassin. I won't call it anything to write home about. I found it entertaining pain. I know these action flicks. And watching Michael Keaton kind of play the deranged former Special Forces, what do you think of his performance?
I'm a Keaton guy.
Yeah, but this is like, this isn't vintage Keaton. This isn't like Michael Keaton in Founder, where he was cutthroat businessman, you know, trying to take the small hamburger joint. I had trouble trying to buy into this role.
Sounds like something a reader or a book guy
would have trouble with. Here we
I'm
go.
I'm just saying, every time I get two hours a week to take my brain away from what we do. I was looking for a little action, looking for a little entertainment. I was entertained. Was it a fantastic movie? It was okay. Maybe, it, you know, 6.5 out of 10.
I'm not being overly critical of the movie, but, you know,
Keaton,
it's amazing.
Keaton was okay. I thought it was an interesting role. He took the fingernail removal like a champ.
that he did, and trust us, that's not exactly a spoiler by any stretch in the imagination.
No, it's not a spoiler by any stretch. I mean, I think certainly Wind River is far superior, without question. But this isn't a bad movie if you're into action flicks. It's probably, I don't know, one of the better action movies I've seen so far this year.
It was tough to see what Riggins' career has become. I mean, you know, after his time playing down there in Friday Night Lights, you know, high school football, to try and see him go off the beaten path a little bit.
Ooh, he had a big role in some other movies before this. What was the Lone Survivor?
Lone Survivor. He was a good guy. A little bit of a different scenario here. I know a lot of these actors and actresses like to try and take on.
It was
a different
role for him. Now that I think about that, yes.
To show some versatility. This week's movie, safe to say that Tom Cruise in American Made is going to make the cut for us.
Was that out last week? Did that come out on Friday?
I think it came out on Friday.
Okay, so then, yeah, we can definitely do that. If it comes out this Friday, it might be a little tougher.
Yeah,
if it was last Friday, yeah, let's go with that one.
It's a good point. And hey, I'm going to actually go one step further, because given the work schedule we've taken on, I know we're adding more content. You know how difficult it is not only to fit the movie in, but, you know, I decided to go Friday afternoon. We had a couple college football positions out there. One, of course, didn't go so well with the Fighting Illini. I feel like I have to try and make a more concerted effort to go to these movies and check them out, not when football games are going on, because if it was a plot-intensive movie, I probably would have missed a good portion of things.
Tuesday is when I go.
I mean, I try for
Tuesday. Tuesday is the only day that I have any breathing in the morning. And the problem is now, apparently Regal has done away with these early movies. I know a lot of people weren't going to them. Probably is not good for business. They claim it's because summer's out and school's back in and the kids aren't going. But me and, you know, a lot of 93-year-old people like going to that 10 a.m. movie. And so my schedule's thrown off now on these Tuesdays.
Maybe they eliminated it because they were afraid of what took place in the bathrooms during those morning movies.
Remember that story? It's not something that I'm going to discuss here again. But if you remember the story from last year, ooh.
I was just hoping that, you know, given how many movies you do see at Regal, being a prominent Diamond status member, speaking of which, is there another status you can get to above and beyond Diamond?
I have no idea. I'm not sure. I thought we talked about that last week. I thought there was, but then you said there wasn't, so there's probably not.
I don't think there is, but there's no way I'm going to get there, so you'll have to get there. Hopefully it's like rolling out the red carpet. They send a limo for you, and you can really take advantage of the VIP, much like you can in the casino business.
No, not so much. Still got to walk to the window and purchase my ticket, unfortunately.
It's a good point. Gear update. Shirts have come in.
Shirts are in. Shirts are for sale. I know we mentioned it that they might be out late last week. They're in, and they're going quick because they're awesome. They're comfortable. Much better quality this year. We went to the Bet the Board logo design, which a lot of you guys wanted. We didn't do that last year because we're like, hey, we don't really know how big this is. We don't know if people are willing to, you know, wear our brand. You guys are. We appreciate the support, but they are selling fast. So you're going to want to get one ASAP. My feeling is the first shipment, is going to be sometime tomorrow. So if you want your shirt pretty quickly here, I would get your order in the next 24 hours. They'll ship tomorrow.
And I believe our social media intern said, folks that wear Bet the Board t-shirts win 99.9% of the time more than regular listeners. Isn't that correct?
It was a good stat wherever they found it. But yes, scientists have proven that if you wear Bet the Board gear, you win 99.9% more of your bets.
See, there you go. You just have to verify. You need to do everything you can to give yourself that competitive edge when we talk about trying to win in one of the more difficult marketplaces that is the National Football League. On to Monday Night Football, of course. Every week, our big game breakdown comes to you courtesy of the American Gaming Association's Sports Betting Coalition. And when you look at this number, Payne, Kansas City, a 7-point home favorite total on this game, 48 right now at BetOnline. It's come down 48. It's come down a little bit.
Come down a little bit. My foot, when we started recording this, was 49.5.
Okay, so a point and a half, it's come down, but we got to get a little housekeeping out of the way.
Holy cannoli.
And when we talk about the American Sports Betting Coalition, two out of every three Americans believe regulated sports betting would allow local economies to benefit from additional tax revenue and job creation. The American Sports Betting Coalition aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver. For more information, go to sportsbettingamerica.com. And as always, you can follow the American Gaming Association on social media. I guess the total movement this morning gives us a logical place to start.
I mean, it's real. Here's the thing. I got one program up over here looking at it come in. I got the odds, the Don Best odds screen over here, and I didn't have it up because of the recording software. And so, you know, just 40 minutes ago, it was 49.5. And we had pause last week. I know a lot of people were running to bet that over. Oh, you see Oakland. You see the Redskins. Gruden has made a concerted effort to run the football. We saw that against the Rams. We saw that last week against Oakland. That completely changes that dynamic of this offense. It is a much slower offense. The clock is ticking when you run the ball. So the market has not adjusted for that yet. Or caught up to it yet. Let's just put it that way. I think the other thing that we're seeing here is the Redskins defense. Number 3 in efficiency right now, despite facing 3 teams that came into this week, all top 10 in offensive efficiency. So that is why we are seeing this tick under.
Do you buy that Redskins? Do you think it's sustainable on the defensive side? I know when you talk about slowing down your pace of play and committing to the ground game, it almost feels like the mentality the Dallas Cowboys had to adopt. By keeping your defense off the field allows them to be more effective and efficient when they're actually out there.
Well, I think it does multiple things, right? So when your defense is out there, it's going at 110%. It's not fatigued. It's not tired. Certainly that plays a huge role in how good a defense can be. But when you start to look at this, like they're not playing lollipops offensively. Right now, again,
lollipop.
3 of the top 10 teams in offensive efficiency through the first 3 weeks. So those are good offenses that they're currently facing. And so you definitely have to respect what they've done defensively. I don't know if they're obviously probably not going to maintain the third spot, but with that offense, you know, I think the offense will start to come around once it starts to gel with a lot of those new components at wideout. You get the ground game going a little bit. I mean, the defense isn't going to be horrific. They're not going to suddenly just become a bad defense, I don't think, when you've, again, faced these teams. They've faced good competition. So they're putting these numbers up there against good competition. So, I mean, I think they're going to be an above-average defense.
I want to ask you about both these teams in general, though. From what we've seen through limited bodies of work through the first couple weeks, which of these teams do you think is indicative, their current form is indicative of where they're going to be when we have the same discussion 6 weeks from now?
Oof. I mean, at 4-0, the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be a player the rest of the year. Am I buying them?
If they get to 4-0.
They're 3-0 right now.
Correct.
Okay, so they're 3-0 right now. I mean, I don't know what they are. I mean, this is so tough for me because we know everyone in the world that was sharp, that wins long-term, that's a professional bettor, was selling the Chiefs stock. And then Kareem Hunt's kind of come out of nowhere. The biggest thing is, yes, Kareem Hunt, he's dropped the weight. He's now all of a sudden a home run hitter. He's, you know, he went from being hawked down by college defenses in the MAC at Toledo to now running away from NFL defenders.
Playing against Eastern Michigan on Tuesday nights can be a lot more daunting than you think, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, so he's made a commitment, obviously, where he's shed about 22 pounds. So he's got that burst. Now, that being said, the offensive line right now should get a lot of credit for that. They're number one in the NFL in adjusted line yards. They've been fantastic. And then you get that extra component that we've talked about, Alex Smith. He's been fantastic against the blitz. He has been fantastic throwing the ball deep. I don't know if those are going to both continue. They haven't throughout the course of his career. Again, maybe Mahomes nipping at his heel. He's rededicated himself. He's bought back in. I just don't think the offense is sustainable when you're starting to look at this. But I could be wrong.
Arrowhead Stadium in primetime, do we make an adjustment for home field advantage, knowing how difficult the places can be to play? Especially later in the year when the temperatures drop. I know you were checking the weather forecast before we came on. Looks like it's going to be cool and clear tonight, so that shouldn't really play a role.
Yeah, Arrowhead on Monday Night Football. First of all, Arrowhead's going to get a full 3 points anyways, and that's not the case in 2017 for a lot of teams. So they're going to get the full three, and then you're going to adjust it slightly up or down based on spot, based on opponent. And so you're certainly going to get a full three. You're also looking at the potential. I mean, Dee Ford's out tonight, and we know Tom Bali was put on the PUP before the season. So if you're the Washington Redskins here, you got one guy you really need to focus on defensively, and that's Houston. You're going to probably chip him with anybody you can. So I think that's going to hurt the defense, not having that extra pass rusher out there. The other thing you want to monitor here is, aside from the travel this week, Kirk Cousins had missed about a day and a half this week because of the birth of his child. You're not going to be doing much at practice without your starting quarterback. So, you know, that leaves me a little, you know, I don't love that. But overall, I think this total correlates to Washington as well. I haven't bet the game. I'm probably not going to bet the game. But I think you will certainly see, despite right now, I know a lot of the websites are showing 70% of the action on Kansas City. I'm looking at a lot of these back-end websites. It's like 4-1 in favor of ticket count to Kansas City. That's only going to grow. But despite that, I think we're going to see professionals on the dog, and that's going to correlate to the under with how Gruden has been playing.
You mentioned injuries. One last thing before we close up this particular game. Jordan Reed, you expect to see him out there tonight for the Skins?
He's practiced this week. I know the toe's been bugging him. We've talked about this toe ad nauseum from the preview podcast. Something he's going to have to deal with the rest of the way. I think Jameson Crowder is probably the guy you're going to want to monitor maybe a little bit more in terms of those two guys being dinged up. But I would think Monday Night Football, both are going to try to give it a go.
So hopefully, folks, if you head to the window, whether it be on leans here, no official investment advice regarding Kansas City, a 7-point home favorite tonight at betonline.ag, total in this game, 48. So we kind of put a bow on all things NFL week four. Start looking ahead towards week five as we do each and every Monday here. Of course, this podcast, hopefully we were able to provide a little bit of insight and a little bit of levity into an otherwise difficult day for a lot of folks out in the Las Vegas area and those that may have been affected elsewhere by the terrible tragedy. Again, 50-plus people being reported by local news, over 400 injured or wounded from the mass shooting out here. So special thanks, you know, whether you're in Las Vegas or other areas, to first responders, the police force that comes under an undue amount of scrutiny. You know, don't let a few bad apples spoil the great work that everybody does to keep us safe and sound. So our thoughts and prayers to everybody affected by this horrific event in Las Vegas. Payne, any final words before we bid our listeners a fond farewell before reconvening on Wednesday with college football?
No, I think we're pretty good. We wrapped this up in pretty good time, and we will be back, right? Wednesday, college football. Thursday, NFL.
The grind continues.
And it's only week four.
In the meantime, show your love and support for the podcast. Buy some gear. Rate and respond to the podcast on iTunes. Can't thank everybody enough. You listeners are the ones we do this for each and every week, and the support and the growth we've seen through the quarter poll has been nothing short of outstanding. Make sure you're visiting the website as well, bettheboardpodcast.com or bettheboard.net, for great articles and content from our talented team of writers. Good luck with whatever decisions you make at the wagering window. I like how, go ahead.
I thought you were setting me up there.
I thought about it, but I don't think I wanted to open that Pandora's box. I want to try and go out on a high note, like a George Costanza, instead of closing this thing on a rant. But, I mean, the floor is open if you want to rant before we close up shop. All right. For Pain Insider, I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck with all of your wagers this week. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.